Letters.
On Vladimir Putin and the West, private equity, Richard Nixon and company cults.
The war is not the West's fault.
From Piotr Arak, Director, Polish Economic Institute, Warsaw. Russia is not an innocent victim of NATO's expansionist policy, as John Mearsheimer claims, article By Invitation, March 19th. On the contrary, it is the Kremlin's policy that forces Russia's neighbouring countries to seek effective alliances. The problem with Mr. Mearsheimer's argument is the assumption that had NATO not expanded, Russia would be a different place today. The historical evidence does not support that. Moreover, his arguments deprive Ukrainians of any agency. He consistently ignores the possibility that Ukrainians might choose democracy and seek membership of the European Union of their own free will. In this, he echoes Kremlin talking points. He draws a false equivalence between a liberal, wealthy economic bloc on the one hand and an authoritarian gas station run by a mafia on the other. Mr. Mearsheimer should consider the distinct possibility that Russia's long history of attempted dominance over Ukraine and other Central and Eastern European countries is what helped drive many Ukrainians and Poles towards the EU.
From Professor Hans Moll, Senior Distinguished Fellow, German Institute for International and Security Affairs, Berlin. Mr. Mearsheimer's attempt to understand the root causes of the conflict suffers from a deeply flawed methodology. He does not understand that world politics are made by real people rather than figments of abstractions. Thus, Russia's security concerns are ultimately defined by Vladimir Putin, and his preeminent security concern is about staying and surviving in power. What threatens that is not NATO expansion, but a colour revolution in Russia. A prosperous democratic Ukraine would surely encourage popular opposition to the Putin regime in Russia, and therefore, in his view, it must be prevented at all costs. Amazingly, Mr. Mearsheimer suggests that Ukraine's maiden uprising in 2014 and the flight of Viktor Yanukovych was a coup. This is not only a morally murky statement because it airily dismisses the concerns and the dignity of the vast majority of 44 million Ukrainians who do not want to be ruled by Mr. Putin's Russia. It also fails to understand that sometimes it is not only leaders who shape politics, but also ordinary people. If Mr. Mearsheimer were right, European and German unification should never have happened. Western institutions may well have put Mr. Putin into a rage, as Mr. Mearsheimer says. NATO enlargement is not, however, at the root of the war. What happens in Ukraine is not a direct threat to Russia's future. It is a direct threat to Mr. Putin's future.
From Monica Friedlander, Cambria, California. Having grown up in communist Romania, I take particular offence at Mr. Mearsheimer's notion that Eastern European countries are merely a buffer zone or some kind of geopolitical pawn. Russia does not own Eastern Europe. These are sovereign countries who desire nothing more than to relinquish their ties to Russia and join the free world. Eastern Europeans begged to join NATO, having made enormous strides towards political reform. Should we have allowed Russia to drag them back into the abyss?
From Nick Dechakivsky, Brighton, Michigan. Mr. Mearsheimer writes, "The mainstream view in the West is that he, Putin, is an irrational, out-of-touch aggressor bent on creating a greater Russia in the mold of the former Soviet Union. Thus, he alone bears full responsibility for the Ukraine crisis." That mainstream view is absolutely correct.
Clarity in private equity.
From David Zaccone, co-founder, Anti-Corruption Data Collective, Washington, D.C. One way to rein in private equity's predatory behaviour, article Special Report, February 26th, would be to pass the Stop Wall Street Looting Act, revived in the Senate last year by Elizabeth Warren. This is far from the only campaign for more transparency in the industry. Leaked documents show that the opacity that defines the private equity industry, including investors' identities, sources of funds, and often even the assets under ownership, has the FBI deeply concerned that the industry is a soft target for money launderers. Anti-corruption campaigners are calling for the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network at the Treasury to finalise a stalled rule from 2015 requiring investment advisers to establish effective anti-money laundering programmes. No less than national security and the integrity of elections is at stake. In 2015, a software company that managed much of Maryland's voter registration system was bought by a private equity fund in which a Russian oligarch with close ties to Vladimir Putin was the largest investor. The fund no longer owns the voter system. Bringing more transparency to private equity would also be a good investment in safeguarding future public spending in a crisis. Our analysis has identified more than $1.2 billion in loans for small businesses that went to companies backed by private funds. Most of these can be written off. The legislation that left open this loophole should be counted as another dividend of the industry's extensive lobbying operation. If private equity is coming into the mainstream and out of the shadows, it should be prepared to play by mainstream rules and stop operating under a shroud of secrecy.
Tricky Dick.
From Matt Turner, Hope, Canada. The attempt to defend or exonerate Richard Nixon by Dwight Chapin, an aide to the former American president, article Watchdog Barking, February 26th, brought to mind Hunter S. Thompson's obituary, which, as it happens, I read whenever I feel a little blue. But that is besides the point. What isn't is that Mr. Chapin's book sounds like a terrible casting of the past. For a more reasonable and balanced view, I feel a refresher of what Mr. Thompson wrote about Nixon is in order. If the right people had been in charge of Nixon's funeral, his casket would have been launched into one of those open sewage canals that empty into the ocean just south of Los Angeles. He was a swine of a man and a jabbering dupe of a president. Nixon was so crooked that he needed servants to help him screw his pants on every morning. The recently departed Mr. Thompson had many more things to say, but I believe that will suffice.
You will conform.
From Andrew Van Berkel, Toronto. Bartleby's column on The Common Characteristics of Cults and Companies, article March 5th, brought back fond memories of my time working for Ross Perot's Electronic Data Systems, better known as EDS, back in the late 1980s. Company indoctrination started with a 10-week electronic boot camp with rules such as no facial hair and no tassels on your shoes. It continued after through motivational trinkets like fluorescent erasers emblazoned with the words, rub out nonconformance.